Welcome to the Empire Builders Podcast, teaching business owners the not-so-secret techniques that took famous businesses from mom and pop to major brands. Stephen Semple is a marketing consultant, story collector, and storyteller. I'm Stephen's sidekick and business partner, Dave Young. Before we get into today's episode, a word from our sponsor, which is, well, it's us. But we're highlighting ads we've written and produced for our clients. So here's one of those.
Morning, Mr. Rubin, sir.
Morning, Jesse. You don't have to call me sir.
Sorry, sir.
Can I help you with something?
Well, I was on the website looking at the Why Choose Kolaire page.
I wrote that page.
Oh, well...
Out with it, Jesse.
Why don't we mention how great our Kolaire HVAC training program is?
I never thought about it.
I've learned so much in the last few months here at Kolaire.
Very true, Jesse. You're on your way to becoming a great technician.
I came to Kolaire with no experience, but with a little book learning and hands-on training from the top HVAC instructors in the business...
Jesse, you gave me an idea.
What is it, sir?
Why don't you write a page about the Kolaire training program for the website?
Me, sir?
Call Kolaire because we care.
Get Kolaire cool. Visit callkolaire.com.
When it comes to the Kolaire training program, who knows better than you?
Nobody! I mean, not to brag or anything.
Jesse... You couldn't if you tried.
License number 6249C.
Hey, welcome back to another edition of the Empire Builders Podcast. Dave Young here alongside Stephen Semple. And we're talking about empires being built and people building fortunes and all these, I assume, serious business topics. Until Stephen whispers in my ear just before we start that we're going to talk about Cabbage Patch Kids.
That's right.
Like, I feel like this happened before my siblings and little sisters, like between the time when I had sisters that would have had Cabbage Patch Kids or children that would have had Cabbage Patch Kids, because I think the whole thing was done by the time I had kids.
So you missed it.
Like, it happened in that liminal space between being a brother with sisters that had Cabbage Patch Kids or being a dad. Like, it just, like, it was a big, big thing, and then it wasn't.
So you just missed it is what you're telling me.
Yeah, yeah. When did they start?
They were, the big thing is when they got really big was really in the 80s is when they were massive. And yeah. They set like, I mean, there were 3 years there where they set like every toy sale record known to mankind. Like, they sold over 130 million units. And they're still around today. They're just not as, you know, they're just not a really huge, massive thing because they're actually... one of the longest running doll lines in the United States.
Okay.
But yeah, but there was a period there where they were like, holy smokes, just like crazy, crazy, crazy big.
Just the fact that I know about them. I mean, I was a dumb kid in his 20s. No reason to know about them in the 80s, but I did. Right. They were a cultural phenomenon.
They were. You know, I remember seeing on television, you know, you would see shots of lineups at toy stores and people going nuts trying to buy these things. It was just was really, really, really crazy.
And cultural references. I mean, Tonight Show and all kinds of things. Right. They were everywhere.
Oh, yeah, they really were. And they were created by a lady by the name of Martha Nelson Thomas. So she was an art student. She went to the Louisville School of Art. She graduated there in 71. And she wanted to create dolls that would touch people. They were handmade and they were each different. She was an artist. And in art school, one of the things she did is this whole idea of what's called soft sculpture, which is about using sewing techniques and things along that lines to create shapes and soft items and pillows and things along that lines. And if we think back to the 60s and 70s, dolls were all mass produced from plastic. And in the 70s, we started getting this folk art movement rising and this return to more organic forms. And so what she started to do was creating these dolls where the features were created by stitching. And this created, you know, something soft and cuddly, and she called them doll babies. And when she was selling them, she included an adoption certificate. She named each baby and would write down some of the characteristics, things that the baby liked and disliked and things along that lines. And it gave each one a unique look and a unique character. And so she starts to display these dolls in craft fairs in the areas, and the dolls sell pretty well in local markets. And along comes Xavier Roberts, who sees the dolls. And he's working in a gift shop, and he sees these dolls, and he convinces her to let him sell some of the dolls. And it's kind of this handshake deal where he's going to resell them. So he starts selling them at the gift shop, and they sell like wildfire. And he invites her to his local craft fair, and she notices that he's selling them in his stores for less than she's selling them at the craft fair. And she doesn't like the lower price. So she sends a letter to him, basically stopping the relationship, saying we're not going to work together longer, and to cease and desist with his sales practices. And he replies that he never agreed to the price, and he will continue with her or someone else. And he had also been an art student, and he had a pretty good understanding of textiles because his mom worked in a textile factory and had taught him how to quilt and things along that lines. So he decides to make his own version of the dolls, and he tweaks it a little bit, and he names them Little People. And he signs every doll like it's a piece of art. So okay. It's 1979, and Martha's making a modest living selling her babies. And she discovers that he's selling his version because a buyer makes a comment. So they're going, oh, these are just like Little People, right? Yeah, just like it.
It's a, I'm sure like most industries, it's a small world,
yep.
Right? The toy makers know who all the other toy makers are.
Yeah, so the jig is up, and she's devastated. He also did a number of things like hers. He also did a birth certificate. He had adoption papers, and he claims he's the father, and he has this idea that the babies are not for sale. You can only adopt them for a fee.
Wait. He claims he's the father of all these...
He does initially.
Okay, that's a different topic for another time, and it's somebody else's podcast can cover that aspect of this.
So he does that, but then he pivots because he wants to create this immersive world, and so there needs to be this story, and he creates this idea that the babies come from cabbage patches. So now he has this concept of them coming from cabbage patches. He decides to create an attraction. He's really inspired by the immersive experiences that places like Disney creates. So he finds this abandoned doctor's clinic in Cleveland, Georgia, and he refurbishes it, and he creates Babyland. And it's the birthplace of the dolls. And people can come in, to adopt a doll. He doesn't have a lot of startup capital, so he goes to the bank saying he needs capital to build a hospital where baby dolls are born out of cabbages.
I'll bet that was the topic during the coffee break at the bank.
But, he's a pretty convincing guy, and he actually gets a loan and puts everything into it. And in the fall of 1978, he opens to the public. And they have incubators and the whole thing. The staff are called nurses and doctors. The cabbages are injected with a magicillin that dilates and reveals a baby within. And it's like, it's huge. Less than a year, he goes to a staff of 56 people. It's a huge tourist draw. And in fact, what's really interesting, it's still around today. People would go home with a toy and a story. So really what we have is the same dolls being sold in a new way, right? So we have the same dolls that Martha had, but being sold now in this new way through this little hospital, right? So Martha goes and gets legal representation and starts action against surprise against Xavier here, surprise, surprise. But in the meantime, he's this huge success in Georgia, has this mass appeal, and he wants to scale up. And Roger Schleffinger approaches him to do advertising for them. So they create a logo, and he suggests doubling down on the mythology. But what he realizes is they need to change the name because the name's not unique, because Fisher Price owns the name Little People. So he suggests Cabbage Patch Kids.
Hey, Stephen, I want to interrupt ourselves. That's not proper grammar, but I did it anyway.
There you go.
In lieu of our commercial this time, I thought maybe you and I could just chat for a minute.
Absolutely. Sounds great.
Our goal with the Empire Builders podcast is to talk about business building strategies that have worked for people that started out small and became empires. We want to help you. If you're a business owner and you're listening to the Empire Builders podcast because you want to build your own empire, we've got a pretty sweet offer for you, and that is to just spend 90 minutes chatting with us. It's not a sales call on our part. It's a 90-minute session where beforehand you do a little bit of homework and give us some basic background information about your business. And then we get on a Zoom call and we learn a little bit more about you, and we give you the very best advice we can give in a 90-minute session.
And I'm going to say it is miles away from it. Like I hate these dog and pony sales calls where I'm great, mm-hmm. I'm amazing, here's samples of our work, you should hire us, which is part of the reason that makes us different is the fact that there is the scorecard and questionnaire that goes out that the owner sends back to us, because it allows us to take a couple of days, do some research, put some thought, and come with some solid recommendations. Because it's my belief that if we can provide some good insights, that somebody may be more interested in hiring us. And certainly, that's a way better experience than meeting with some sales guy who runs you through a dog and pony. It's lots of fun. It's great value. People get a recording of it. I highly recommend people take us up on the offer.
Easy to find us. You're listening to our podcast, so find a way to request your 90-minute session with us. Looking forward to talking to you. Let's get back to the story.
Back to the story.
Now, okay. Coleco comes along and wants to do a deal with them. But here's one of the challenges. How do you mass produce them and make them unique? And meanwhile, we have this mm-hmm. lawsuit going on for Martha where she wants acknowledgement that it's her idea. So while he's fighting that off, he's looking to do this manufacturing. And what he decides to do is make the faces out of vinyl, but what they would do is 6 molds, change the eye color, change the skin tone, and the hair to create variability. Different clothes, etc., which makes each doll different, but now mass-produced. Coleco orders 2 million in a factory in Hong Kong. And what's interesting is, Coleco got into this because at the time, the toy industry was technology crazy, but Coleco was getting concerned that might be coming mm-hmm. to an end. And the thing that's kind of interesting when you look at Cabbage Patch Kids is they're kind of ugly, but people still wanted to have them, right?
Yeah, I wasn't going to point that out.
But, you know, there's this thing, the uglier something gets, the more our brain flips it to cute, the more we need to rescue it. And this has actually been studied. Like, there's been a bunch of studies around this whole, you know, capturing of imperfections and imperfections making things kind of more adorable. So now the court rules in favor of Xavier. So remember, we've got this court case going on between
the lawsuit,
Xavier and Martha. He wins round one. Now, she doesn't give up.
Okay.
They're now building a second trial. And this one's more around some ideas on advertising. But he pushes ahead, launches the new kids. And in 1983, they released to the nation 2 million Cabbage Patch Kids nationwide. And there's a mad rush.
Wow.
Demand like it's never been seen before. It sells out before Christmas. Stores are selling out in hours. They've now got plants working 24 hours a day. They're creating 200,000 of these things a week. They're air freighting them. Part of the appeal is, and this was a bit of an accident, this was never planned by Coleco. Part of the appeal is they're hard to get. And the craze is chaos. Like, the reason why you and I remember it is we would see on television news segments where there's like police barricades and people fighting to get their hands on these damn dolls.
Here's the funny thing, right? I mean, I remember that, but we talk about scarcity and we talk about it with clients. We talk about it with students and we talk about ways to create scarcity or the appearance of it, right? Limited time offers, limited quantity, lots of different things you can do. Here they got scarcity by right of scarcity. They actually were scarce. It's like, this is lesson one of scarcity.
What I always wonder about on things like that, if they knew, somebody told them ahead of time, there's a demand for 400 million of these, would they have made 400 million and then released? You know, companies are so afraid of scarcity, but yet scarcity is really, really valuable. And we see this a lot in certain clothing brands. There's a number of clothing brands out there that have done great jobs of creating really and truly limited edition things, limited edition releases that, you know, sell out like wildfire and end up becoming, you know, collectible and hugely valuable and all this other stuff simply because of the scarcity that is around it.
Sure. And it's real. And I think in their case that you probably wouldn't do it. I think we have a tendency to create some kind of offer that feels scarce before we create actual scarcity, right? It's sort of like saying, hey, it's a limited edition. Well, what's it limited to? Well, it's limited to however many we can sell.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. We'll stop making it when they stop selling.
It kind of reminds me of the old, I think it's a Yogi Berra line, but this place was really popular till everybody started coming here, right? So like Cabbage Patch Kids were really popular till everybody had one.
That's true.
There's a certain truth to that, right? They're immensely popular when you can't get your hands on one.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and the whole limited edition thing is kind of interesting too. Like I remember one time, because of course every university student had a drinking game around the antique roadshow somehow, you know, the beer. But I remember watching it one time and somebody talking about, so this person brought in this item and he said, well, you know, it would be really valuable if it wasn't the collector's edition. And I was like, what? And he said, yeah, because the problem is everyone holds on to the collector's edition and throws the other ones out. So the ones that are really valuable are the ones that are not the collector's edition.
Yeah.
Because there's fewer of them around. But coming back to the Cabbage Patch Kids, Xavier's now worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Popularity between 1984 and 85, like there's like, it is just off the charts in terms of like there's several billion dollars worth of Cabbage Patch Kids stuff sold, especially when you take into account all the licensing. Like there was 2000 licensing deals done in 1985, right? In terms of being able to put Cabbage Patch logos on other things. But Martha gets a breakthrough because they go to court over this whole idea of reverse confusion. And the idea of reverse confusion is somebody thinking that the Cabbage Patch doll was the original rather than hers being the original. And so she ends up settling out of court for an undisclosed amount of money. And Xavier had to also admit the inspiration came from Martha. And when you read about Martha, you know, at the end of the day, she didn't become wealthy off of it. But you know what? She was an artist. She put her kids through college. She had a house, you know. So she managed to get a decent financial settlement out of all of this.
I was going to say, I hope she was at least happy the rest of her life. I don't know. She might still be around, but.
Yeah. And I saw an interview with a friend of hers when I was researching this. And she really talked about how she was quite content and financially comfortable for the rest of her life. So Martha seemed to do well. But here, coming back to scarcity, here's where things started to go wrong for Cabbage Patch Kids. Coleco, because now the technology craze did start to come to an end, and Coleco was heavy into that space, Coleco started to have financial problems. So what they needed to do was make more Cabbage Patch Kids to overcome their financial problem. And Cabbage Patch Kids sales were starting to just slow a little tiny bit, and they flooded the market.
There goes scarcity.
Yep, there goes scarcity. It went the other way. And all of a sudden, Cabbage Patch Kids just suddenly went from being this really hot item to being completely unpopular. And Coleco goes bankrupt, and the license was sold to Hasbro. But the funny thing is, Babyland in Cleveland, Georgia is still around. But there's a couple of things that I thought was really neat when I was reading about this that I didn't know about. And that is, in the early days of the Cabbage Patch Kids was this really super immersive experience that he created. Like literally, when you went in, there were people dressed as nurses who would swaddle up the baby and bring the baby out for you to take a look at. And the adoption certificates and the names, and they even had this whole thing where they had created where they would do this little phony injection thing and the cabbage would open up and there'd be this baby there. Like, it sounds so insane.
I mean, it sounds really creepy.
It does sound really creepy. But what we know is when you really create these big experiences, like when you go heavy at it, that's actually when these things work.
Yeah, it's an amazing
story.
And
it created this massive phenomena. And then the scarcity just blew it into a whole new realm. And then it was the elimination of the scarcity and the market saturation that blew the whole thing up, like in the wrong way.
Here's my hunch. The clinic in Cleveland, Georgia helped them create the stories, right? It helped them create the mythology of it. There can't be more than a small percentage of customers that ever went there.
Correct.
I just looked on Google Maps. It's in the middle of nowhere.
It is in the middle of nowhere.
It's a tiny little town. It's an hour and a half from downtown Atlanta.
We're in Atlanta next week. We're not going there.
Oh, I was thinking we should get our photo. I'm interested in it almost like for the same reason I'd be interested in a haunted house.
Yeah, there you are. Right? There you are.
Man, I think the lesson of scarcity and the lesson of having a story that goes like almost an individual story with the mass produced item, that's hard to do. And you've got to hand it to him for that.
Because each had a name, they had the likes and dislikes, you know, which was the thing Martha came up with that he built upon. Mm-hmm. Like he built upon that and then took the story deeper. They did a couple of things that no one had done before. They were ugly dolls. They were individual. Everybody else in the doll industry was mass-produced, identical, beautiful. And they were doing this individual, unattractive, weird story behind it. That's what captured people's imagination.
The right scarcity at the right time.
Yeah, hats off to Martha. Hats off to Xavier. It's too bad they weren't able to find a way to do it together. That's the only part that's sad in the whole story.
And on my part, bullet dodged, not having them in my house.
I hear you, man. I hear you.
They were too popular by the time my kids needed one. Yeah, you can't. Everybody's got one of those. You don't need it. Well, thanks for sharing the Cabbage Patch Kids story on Empire Builders Podcast, Stephen.
All right. Thanks, David.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please share us, subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and leave us a big, fat, juicy 5-star rating and review. And if you have any questions about this or any other podcast episode, email to questions@theempirebuilderspodcast.com.